Welcome to Drilling Insight. I'm Jeremy Verduzco, host and editor of The Driller Magazine. I'm joined today by drilling trainer, the driller writer, and co-host, Brock Yorty. Good morning, Brock.
Good morning, Jeremy. How are you doing today?
You know, I am excellent. Looking forward to getting out and about to the trade shows in a couple of days. So we're excited about that here at The Driller. So on today's show, we have Curtis Shuck. Thanks for being on the show, Curtis.
Thanks for having us.
So Curtis is chairman and CEO of the Well Done Foundation. The organization helps identify and plug orphan oil and gas wells, ones with defunct or unknown ownership. So by some estimates, there are millions of orphan wells in the US and Canada alone. Unsecured wells can leak methane, a powerful greenhouse gas. So the Well Done Foundation works to solve this issue. So Curtis, let's start with our usual opening question. You've been in the oil and gas industry. Did you choose this industry or did it choose you?
Well, I think it was a little bit of both. I started in the early 1980s in Alaska, where I grew up, and have been fortunate to be involved in some form or fashion ever since. And so, for me, I guess it's been this love-hate relationship working through it and, you know, seeing the good times and the bad times. But I was very fortunate to spend quite a bit of time in the port industry. We're really focused on terminal development and refined products delivery and supply chain management, what have you. So it's good to get back on this end of the shovel for sure.
This is such a great topic, and I love the company name. I actually grew up on a horse farm. My father owns a drilling company, and my mother named the farm Well Done Farms. So nice. When I saw this, I was very excited to get to hear more about it. So tell us about the Well Done Foundation and who are you and what do you do?
Sure. Well, I appreciate the entree, Brock. So the Well Done Foundation is a 501c3. We're based here in Montana, but are working all over the country. The Well Done Foundation and the Well Done name came as a bit of an epiphany after I encountered my first orphan well up in northern Montana. As I was out in the field supporting one of the local grain elevators and the Inland Port Authority here in northern Montana. So I was out talking with farmers about sourcing grain and just, you know, general supply chain and logistics issues. And happened to pawn an orphan well. And I just couldn't believe my eyes that what I saw and what I smelled. But initially it was that visual impact of what was left behind by the industry. And, you know, for me, it just was something that was almost unthinkable that, you know, anybody in any universe that would be okay to walk away from something like that. And then, you know, as the journey continued, it really, you know, discovered what the scope of the problem was. But that night, as I drove from Shelby, Montana, back to Bozeman, which is where I was living at the time, you know, 4-hour drive, I just couldn't get this image out of my head of what I saw. And then, of course, as soon as you see one, you start to recognize all of the others that are in the area. And I just, it was, like I said, it was just overwhelming. And so that trip home that night, and it was, you know, one of those midnight drives. And I just, you know, I felt compelled that it was sort of my time to do something. And it's funny, you know, when you have those inflection points where you can either go right or go left. And you know, I guess I could have just pretended I never saw it and kept going on my merry way, but I really felt, you know, passionate that this was something that I needed to at least explore further. And so it was literally at that time that the Well Done name was kind of envisioned. And literally on that trip home, you know, I was, you know, securing domain names and, you know, kind of mapping out this whole strategy and by the time I got back to home that night in Bozeman, about 2 a.m, I had already kind of, you know, whiteboarded out sort of where we were going, and the rest is sort of history now. So pretty exciting stuff.
Okay. So you've worked in oil field services, but now you're at a nonprofit that works to plug wells and mitigate legacy emissions from this very same industry. So what brought you to the conservation side, or do you even see it as two different sides?
Well, for me, I really think, Jeremy, it's about doing the right thing. And, you know, I was raised, as I'm sure, you know, both of you were, and, you know, in a environment where, you know, you try to, you know, leave no trace or leave it better for the next guy, you know, maybe go the extra mile and reach down and pick up the garbage that you see on the street. And so for me, this is really just that. This is about, you know, me hopefully inspiring others to sort of to go the extra mile and do the right thing. And what's cool about this orphan well program is that, you know, it's totally fixable. I mean, this is something that we can manage. You know, we adopted the tagline one well at a time because, you know, when you look at it holistically, it is overwhelming. It's crazy big and, you know, so much is going on. But when we address it on a one well at a time program, like, you know, I mentioned, we just finished our 8th well yesterday and moved the rig over and rigged up on number 9. You know, we've just seen an amazing outpouring of support. And what's great about this program is it's so literal. I mean, it's literally gas on, gas off, right?
Yeah.
All right. So for our listeners out there, a well done defines an orphan well how?
So each state typically maintains a list of orphan wells, and the criteria varies a bit, but essentially an orphan well is this. An orphan well is a well that has no longer has a financially viable, responsible party at the table. And so what happens is then that those wells essentially become wards of the state. Because through the transition of business and comings and goings, the last guy in line wasn't able to continue to maintain it, and so he had to forfeit his bond or whatever financial assurance vehicle he had in place and walk away. And then they just become the responsibility of the respective states. And that's the true meaning. There are other states maintain lists that are like abandoned, and that's, you know, obviously there's the shut-in status, and then there's a period after they've been shut in for so many years and the operator hasn't, you know, plugged or produced, and they sort of go into this next level. But in general, it's those wells that no longer have a financially responsible party at the table.
So walk us through what you call the well done process. Once you identify one of these orphan wells, what are the next steps? What are you bringing to the table here?
Sure. So our program then includes at that point, once, you know, we identify in an area a potential well, a candidate well, the first thing we do then is to go to work with the surface owner. So often, you know, many states have what's referred to as split estate, where the surface owner and the mineral rights have been bifurcated. So two different parties that have ownership interest. Because the well done foundation never takes an interest in the minerals, so we're not producing these wells. Our dealings are strictly with the surface owner for access. So we work with the surface owners to develop an access program. Our experience has been that the surface owners are now our greatest cheerleaders. Oftentimes they've been sort of left holding the bag, if you would, and with really no real relief other than you know, what the state or states can offer and when they're going to bring it to the table. So,
And these could be farmers, ranchers, private landowners.
In every scenario that you can imagine in terms of the surface owner configuration. But for them, you know, this is an opportunity to have something done about this problem that they are either smelling or farming around. And so once we establish the net access with the surface owner, then we start on an evaluation process. And, you know, we need to make sure that the well qualifies for our particular program. And our, you know, our particular program is really air emission centric. You know, so often states have a prioritization process that typically has been driven by oil at the surface, you know, either groundwater interaction or surface water interaction. You know, it's only been recently that this whole, you know, awareness of methane gas and the problem that it's creating. And so our focus is primarily on the air emission side. So we want to verify the presence of gas, the understand what the composition of that gas is, and then, of course, how much gas is being emitted. And so we have a process whereby then we'll study a well for a period of 30 to 60 days. We can very quickly make a determination on what a well is doing, but we typically ask for 60 days. We enter into an access agreement with the landowner. We work then with the state regulatory agency. Every state's got a little different, you know, way of doing things, but we essentially file a notice with that state that, hey, we're going to be doing non-invasive, non-destructive testing on this well for a period of time. And then if the well qualifies under the well done criteria, we actually formally then what we call adopt the well. And, you know, we use that that sort of scenario as a good way to explain it, whether you're, you know, adopting a puppy or you're adopting a child. You know, once we get to that adoption stage, it's really for keeps. And so we want to make sure that, you know, we've got a good due diligence program going into it. So not only are we understanding, you know, what the air emissions are, what the surface conditions are, but we're also then very focused at that point on the executability, I should say, of the project, which we need to look at things like access and what's the, you know, how can we get in and out of the site? What's the ingress and egress looks like? What a, you know, and there's all these things that factor in then. Does this work as a viable project? Once we check that box, then we literally enter into the agreement with the state, which is, and again, it varies from state to state, but essentially what we do is we then bond the well. So we write a check and we then assume, so it's kind of funny because we actually pay the state to assume the responsibility and the financial, you know, burden of then plugging the well.
Yeah, here's some money. Let me take this risk from you.
Yeah, let me take this liability off your hands. And so then at that point, you know, then we really roll up our sleeves and go to work. We go through a very detailed process of due diligence and monitoring. That monitoring can be, you know, up to 6 months in time. The well we just plugged yesterday up here in Montana, we'd actually been monitoring that well for about a year and a half. And it was one of our oldest wells that we had been monitoring. And then as we get it all, you know, understand what the emissions profile is, then we get it up on our list of those wells that are available and looking for a corporate sponsorship. To date, we have taken zero public dollars in our program. So there's not a single taxpayer dollar that's underwriting this work that we're doing. And we're pretty happy about that. And the reason is because we feel that there is a business proposition and a commercial solution around this. And it's been interesting because there certainly is lots of talk out there now about, you know, infrastructure dollars and how those can be applied. And I think, look, there's going to be a great spot for that money to really do some good work. But in our program, that's really not our driving factor. And so we're either self-funding or working with partners, as I said, to look at well sponsorships. We are the Well-Done Foundation sponsored and or is currently sponsoring the first of its kind orphan and abandoned well carbon methodology. So we feel that there is, through the development of carbon offsets, getting essentially recognized for the good work we're doing, for the emissions that we're stopping, that there should be, again, a commercial solution behind this. And so we're working with the American Carbon Registry, ACR, who's part of WinRock. And the methodology is actually currently listed as in development, but it's about to be released for public comment. And we're hoping that, we're hoping by the end of the year that we'll actually be able to start, delivering projects under that methodology. But we're not waiting for that. You know, we feel our mission is to plug wells, and that's what we're doing. So.
Okay, so let's get to the getting muddy and in the field. How do you locate these wells? Because obviously, I've worked on projects across the country in oil and gas and water. And there's times where, heck, my internship at Halliburton, they were pointing out old wells in Pennsylvania that you could tell because they were all set up with the old rod pumps and giant wheels. But how do you locate some of these wells? Has it been hard? Has there been a couple wells with climate change and whatnot that, like, you just can't get equipment to?
Oh my gosh, you know, that's, Brock, that's a really good point. So we are just kicking off our work in Pennsylvania. I was just there last week. And so this is a really good segue. We're in the process of bringing two wells into our program there, and we're hopeful that we'll be able to actually get those plugged here in September. The one thing, Pennsylvania is like ground zero. First well, the Drake well was drilled there. Literally thousands and thousands of orphan wells. The one thing that I was stunned by, but for me it was this aha moment, was, while there may be like all of these orphan wells on state land, on federal land, on private land, you just can't get to them. And I mean, it's like, it's crazy. When they first drilled the state there in the late 1800s, they must have clear cut the whole place, because now you go back in and it's literally, you're in a very mature forest. And so the ability, to my point earlier about our assessment of a location, is that, many of those sites in Pennsylvania are going to require a significant amount of infrastructure before you can even, think about moving a rig in and doing any kind of work. And so not only do you need to be a well plugger, but you need to be a logger and then a road builder. And so I'm hoping, and I want to give a shout out to the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, who is the organization charged with the oversight of the orphan wells. They've been fantastic to work. They've literally rolled out the red carpet for us. And so what a great collaboration. But I can see a scenario coming down the road where, I mentioned earlier those potential federal infrastructure dollars. I think those infrastructure dollars could really play a key role in creating access into some of these denser locations. Because if you put it on the cost of the individual well to log the site, to build the road, it's going to be astronomically expensive. But, it does make sense maybe to use some of those federal dollars to support, to open up access, not only for the plugging and abandonment of those orphan wells, but for other things like timber sales and just public access on the public lands.
So that jumps right into my next question, equipment. You're talking about abandoning wells in Montana, which we're talking about 20th century oil and gas well creation versus 19th century oil and gas well creation in Pennsylvania. What equipment are you using to start the process? And then I know we're going to want to get into the actual abandonment, but what do you need to, you know, pull some of these old wooden rods versus, you know, the modern stuff that we kind of use in the, you know, the Western United States?
Yeah. So we're, you know, the wells that the legacy field that we're in right now in Montana is the called the Kievan Sunburst. And it was first drilled in the early 1920s. And so we're literally the well that we plugged yesterday was drilled in 1925. And so we've got a lot of, again, that legacy stuff. You know, it varies. Some wells, you know, you come up to rock that still has tubing and rods in the hole. And of course, the challenge then is to be able to recover those in one piece, to your point, because you're right. I mean, there are wooden rods and case or, you know, tubing that's, you know, all levels of corrosion. So obviously, the first thing we do is to really try to, you know, do a good job of pulling that out using, you know, some variant of a surface rig, workover type of a rig to be able to get that program out of the hole. Typically, when we're at that point, we've adopted the well. The states are pretty, and probably rightly so, pretty sensitive of allowing somebody to come in and make the situation worse. Because that's happened, you know, coming in and high grading, you know, anything of value off the well, the pump jack goes missing, the, you know, and then this big mess at the surface. So, but yeah, our typical consist is a workover rig. And then of course we've got a cementing unit that then follows on behind. We're talking about other various ways of you know, utilizing some different equipment, and obviously in different areas, it's gonna be important looking at, you know, coil tubing, where you've got access. What we find is that, you know, the first thing we need to do is figure out if we can get to bottom. And well, for the first thing is figure out if there's even an idea of where bottom is, because a lot of these legacy wells don't have great records. And so the first thing we're doing is trying to figure out a way to tag and see where current bottom is, and then figure out what we need to do to get to bottom. We've been very, you know, working closely here in Montana with the Board of Oil and Gas, also another amazing organization to work with. These guys have really been creative in supporting the work that we're doing. Of course, we're saving them about 30 grand every time we go out and plug a well, so we're glad they appreciate that. They actually, to the Board of Oil and Gas here in Montana, the board came out and endorsed our project unanimously, which was pretty awesome for an organization like that to do. Again, we're industry players. We're not, you know, we feel that this is an industry opportunity, a great opportunity for us to own the narrative around this work that we're doing. But so once we establish the bottom, we don't have to go fishing or try to.
Are you using downhole cameras or anything like that?
We sure do. Yeah, we sure do on occasion. You know, what we find is there's just so much scaling, so much carbon buildup in these wells. So once we get to that point, then we do, we obviously want to get in and run some tubing down the hole to try to do some flushing or to do some way of cleaning it up. You know, typically the casing integrity is suspect from the get-go. And so we're currently using,
suspect.
Yeah. We're using like a balance plug type of a program. And we really are relying on not only the integrity of the bottom plug, but then the gel spacer, which we then squeeze in with the cement top plug. To really, if there is, you know, casing integrity issues or perforations in the casing from corrosion, that gel spacer really, you know, permeates beyond the casing walls and into the formation to create that interstitial plug to stop that transmission of gas either inside or outside the casing.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about your grouting methods and, you know, what kind of pumps you're putting to work on these plugging projects.
You bet. So we're very fortunate to be working with here in Montana with a company called GCC. They've got a plant here in down near Three Forks, Montana, in Trident. The reason that we've selected GCC is because they have a low carbon cement program that they are working with. For us in our carbon accounting, at the end of the day, when we're sitting down and doing our carbon math and we're adding up the gazintas and the gazatas of our program, every little thing that we do matters. And cement obviously has got a pretty, you know, robust carbon footprint. So anything we can do to reduce that, we are. What we're also using then in addition to that cement program for the, especially for the bottom plug, is that we use a loss circulation material so that you know, that bottom plug stays where we need it to stay. We're working currently with Montana Technical University or Montana Tech on the development of some new materials in this space. In fact, we've got a summer intern here who's been a graduate who's been running our research project there. Great opportunity to interact with some Montana farmers. So we're using a hemp herd material in that as LCM. It's also, in addition to working as loss circulation material, it's also got a good carbon footprint to help offset the cement that we're using. And we're using a typical truck mounted triplex type of a pump then, which has a mixer on it. This is kind of your standard cementing unit that you would see on any type of a casing cementing job. And then in the gel spacer, we're obviously running a standard bentonite clay gel, but we've also started adding some additional carbon offsetting material into that called biochar. And the reason for that is that it's got such a carbon offsetting benefit to it. And in fact, we just were running a field test yesterday on this. So what's been cool in Montana in our pilot project here is that we're able to use this as a proving ground for many of these kind of variations of the tried and true techniques. Obviously, we're always maintaining, qualification with the API specifications. So we're making sure that we're meeting those. But it's been fantastic to work with the state here and trying some of these alternative methods. And then of course our surface plug, the surface cementing section, we use just again a typical grout program there on top of the gel spacer. So obviously that cement is squeezing the gel, out through the perfs in the casing, and then all the way up to surface. And we always, once we remove the tubing string out of the hole, we've got some displacement to manage. We'll typically top it off, at surface with, whatever a hose, or literally just down the hole, and we'd be anywhere, again, based on what the casing is doing. There's a little bit of makeup there. This particular well yesterday, we ended up with only about 20 feet from surface. So when we do our final cutoff of the well, which is kind of the next step then, is that we'll come in after we get the equipment off the location, come in and excavate around the well casing. We end up cutting off here in Montana, 6 feet below surface. We cut it off 6 feet below surface. We'll fill the rest of the whatever that void is up to the surface with cement. And then we actually put a little rat slab around that casing. And we installed then a monitoring chamber, subsurface monitoring chamber with a vent tube that goes to surface. Because when we're all said and done here, we actually have a 10-year post-closure monitoring program that we voluntarily put up there. And it's really important to us. Number one, in the carbon world, the carbon credit period, or the crediting period is a 10-year period. And so we felt it was only appropriate then that we backstop that with, you know, our monitoring process for a 10-year. So yeah, that's kind of walking through the program. It's, you know, pretty standard stuff. You know, it's great. The hands that we have, the service companies that we have that work with us, you know, enjoy the work we're doing. We typically operate at a little bit of a, I don't want to say a slower pace, but more of a managed pace, because we just really need to make sure that every step is done correctly. We're continuously monitoring through the process and measuring. And so it's been a little bit of a transition working with some of these service companies who are, you know, in, by nature are sort of set up to blow and go. And you know what I mean? Time is money, and you know, money never sleeps. To, you know, kind of get into this new program. But, you know, it's been awesome. And again, we've got some great companies we're working with. We're qualifying new service companies now. We've got a team in Pennsylvania that we're working with. We're in Louisiana right now, qualifying companies there. Obviously, safety is our number one program. This project, as you can imagine, has so many eyes on it that we've got to do it right every time. And so that's our primary focus. And so that's what we're doing. We enter into then a master services agreement, which is a typical, you know, industry instruments, and it outlines all of our safety expectations and performance expectations. And then we start going to work. We're, as I mentioned, in Louisiana, we're qualifying contractors there now. We've got several wells. We just entered into an agreement with the state of Louisiana. We've got 36 wells that we're monitoring there now. And so, yeah, we're pretty excited as we're scaling the project up.
So let's talk about well closure. You said that you put a vent on and you monitor for 10 years. Obviously, Montana, Pennsylvania, and Louisiana all have different closure report requirements, GPSing and stuff. Talk about that.
You bet. So we, to your point, we follow each one of those regulatory requirements to the T. This is kind of an over, above and beyond. Many of those states, in fact, each one that you mentioned, as soon as the final inspection is performed by the state regulatory agency, they sign off on the project as being complete. In Montana, we actually have the surface owners sign off as well. That the project is complete. And so at that point, what happens after, you know, all of the plug-in abandonment, surface restoration is taking place pursuant to the scope of work. So what we'll do on the front end of all of that is we'll develop a scope of work that the state signs off on, that the surface owner signs off on, just so we don't get to the end of the project, like you're saying, and then have there be the go get me one more rock thing, you know. And which I hate it when that happens. But anyway, so we perform, you know, execute to the scope. And then typically what happens is that the state then would release that bond and the project is completed. What we do then is we just flip that bond or turn that bond over onto the next well, and away we go. So
you spoke a moment ago about qualifying contractors. What kinds of extra safety procedures are you looking for? Does it kind of depend on which state you're working in?
It's fairly typical across the, you know, across the network. We want to see what their safety record has been. So we ask for access to, you know, their TRIR data. You know, we do ask folks to, you know, to be signatory to programs like, you know, ISNet. And part of the reason for that is so that we just have, you know, good visibility on kind of what their track record has been. And then we set performance standards going forward. Obviously, it's a challenge in some of these areas where, you know, those level of contractors don't exist. And so then we work then to have a variation and qualify the contractor. So the thing that's important for the Well Done program is that we use the locals to do the work. We want to make sure that, because it it really develops a strong community tie. And this way, we're putting folks in the community to work. Folks in the community are talking about, you know, the great things that we're doing. It's gone a long way to really help us, you know, be a part of the community and engage the community in the solution delivery process.
It's wild because the drilling industry, the abandonment industry in general, we have some big companies, we have some medium-sized companies, and we have a lot of family companies that trying to meet a TRIR or an EMR with 5 or 10 employees with one recordable happens. And then we compound this with you're abandoning orphan wells that could have methane, H2S, you know, as you're displacing, you know, material out of the ground, you have things coming to surface. How do you deal with those things? What is the, how do you go that extra mile now that we're not on a normal location anymore? Like you said, we're in the middle of the woods and, you know, there's...
Yeah. So, you know, as we're developing the plugging plan, which is not only the subsurface work, but also the surface location, how we're going to lay out the location, similar to when you start drilling a well, right? You develop a scope and a layout. So we talk about our ingress and egress paths. We talk about, you know, where we're going to be staging equipment. You know, Brock, to your point, you know, so much of the work that we're doing in this legacy field are in, you know, what's referred to as stripper fields, and it's really mom and pop oil. And I got to tell you that some of these mom and pop operators are some of the safest operators that I've seen. To your point, they may not meet the TRIR standard, or they may not, you know, meet the stringent criteria, but that's where, you know, we have to look at going that extra mile. And it just means that we've got to provide more oversight and we've got to provide more, you know, kind of interaction. But I found that that these are some of the, because they're families, right? And these are people who work and live with each other and are in these communities. So, you know, there is a path forward. There is absolutely a way for us to qualify those folks. It's a little bit more work on our end, but, you know, at the end of the day, it pays great results. And, you know, we're not always looking to go for the cheapest, right? We want to make sure that we go with the best, but that doesn't always mean that we need to bring travel a crew all the way from Ohio into Pennsylvania to do the work when you've got folks right there in Bradford that can, you know, that can meet the need.
Yeah. So the foundation's first stated goal is to plug every orphan well in Montana. Talk a little bit about the scope of that. How's that going for you?
Well, we're just starting on number 9 right now. So things are moving ahead there. You know, it's been wonderful to be working in the Kevin Sunburst field. You know, I sometimes may grouse about the wind or the weather. But then, you know, when I visit Pennsylvania or Louisiana, it's always nice to get back to Montana where you can watch your dog run away for a week, you know, and you don't need to worry about, you know, like moving to the next location 600 feet away and you just sort of, you know, move the program over there. You know, we're continuing to execute on our program. I think as we, you know, like we had hoped that, we'd be a little further along, but I think we're actually right on pace this year. We've got a dedicated crew here in Montana that's working with us. We can, you know, if everything lines up, we can do about a well a week in this particular field. Of course, you know, you always get the curveball. We had a well that we plugged on Earth Day that we were on that location for 22 days. It didn't want to let go. That one came hard, I'll tell you what. But like the one we just did, the one we just finished yesterday, start to finish on the plugging side, was 2 days. And so that's possible with a pace like that, we can really make some headway. So for us right now in Montana, it's just having the funding available to do the work. And once then the carbon methodology is finally approved, then we'll have a better, more reliable and ratable income stream to be able to do the work. But the one thing that's important is that of all the orphan wells, you know, across the U.S. and certainly even here in Montana, not everyone is going to qualify for the Well Done program on based on the emissions factors. But what's awesome about the way that we're doing it through a nonprofit is that we're not always driven by the bottom line of what it's going to take to get the well done, because we have other corporate sponsorships and donations then that we're able to bring to the table to complete the project. And so, yeah, that's been the beauty. And I struggled at first as we were just getting going with Well Done. In fact, Well Done started with Well Done Montana and then the Well Done Foundation. I found at that time it was very hard to raise capital. You know, we were in the middle of the pandemic. We didn't have a methodology yet. While people thought what we were doing was awesome, there was just no way to collateralize that, if you would. And so the cost of money was astronomical, like mob money almost, you know. And so we opted out of that and we just went 100% nonprofit. And that's when things really changed for us and those doors opened up. So that, you know, we're really committed to this, to our mission now on the nonprofit side. And we found that it's kind of created a safe space for us with the regulatory agencies, with the community. We're not seen as a profiteer, you know, coming in to kind of slam it out and go on to the next one. We're here, we're in each community that we work. So
the foundation sells carbon credits or offset credits to people that can buy them for themselves or give them as gifts. Talked a little bit about that, but let's get into it.
Sure. So, you know, an interesting twist, as we were working or are still obviously working with the American Carbon Registry to develop the methodology and to get it finally approved and certified and verified. And, you know, we probably have, you know, I can't even tell you how many third party people are looking at our stuff here, and that's all good and fine. So, but what happened at that point, Brock, is that we were plugging wells and we were generating these offsets. And I said to our team, well, the heck, we're just going to create our own version, right? I mean, it's a voluntary market. So what the heck? So we developed what we have trademarked now is the Climate Benefit Unit. And the Climate Benefit Unit is a voluntary carbon credit. It's got the equivalent of 1 ton of carbon dioxide, which is how carbon accounting is done. So yeah, we've got a retail platform right now where we're selling our CBUs and offering those to individuals or to companies. And it's been amazing, the numbers that we've been selling, the folks that have just said, hey, this makes sense to me. Again, what's so cool about it is it's visual. It's literally gas on, gas off, and people can get their arms around it. What we've offered as we're dealing with, you know, larger players is that, you know, if they want to purchase climate benefit units now, that we'll convert those, you know, down the road to a more of a certified program once we get into it with ACR. But it's been a good way for us to at least get some, you know, generate some revenue from the good work that we've been doing. Brock, your point, it drives the carbon racket crazy, right? I mean, these guys are like, you know, it's a very interesting market. It's been fun to see the transition where there's actually, there are some major players that are coming into this trading space that are seeing that this is an opportunity. So they're shaking it up. Obviously, we're shaking it up on our end over here because, again, we know what we're doing. We can do the math, you know what I mean? And so it's been fun to do that, to sell those climate benefit units.
Yeah, yeah. And they're fairly affordable. So it's, it seems like a good gift idea. That sort of thing. So, going larger in scope, people and companies can also adopt wells, sponsoring the whole process. Tell us about some of the available wells, where they are and what the benefits of sponsorship companies will find.
You bet. So yeah, we've got wells available in Montana for sponsorship, or just bringing those online in Louisiana and Pennsylvania, starting to do work in Kansas now. And so the way that that works is that we tee up the whole history of the well, and we try to promote, you know, what that well has contributed, you know, to the community, in terms of jobs, in terms of economic vitality over the years, to really tell that backstory. You know, we're not here to villainize oil and gas by any means. We're here to show, you know, to do it respectfully, and to sort of bring closure to this legacy asset. So we offer this opportunity then for companies to buy into that sponsor, you know, a portion or an entire project. And so what we'll do then at that point, Jeremy, is we'll sit down with the company and we'll develop a scope of work of, you know, what we're going to do, what they're interested in participating in, at what level. Some folks just want to write a check and maybe, you know, get some climate benefit units at the end of the day. Others have been very interested to be boots on the ground and actually be there with us. Like yesterday, the company, company called Oil Works, who adopted this well here, their CEO was on the rig floor yesterday, you know, tubing in and out of the hole. And so it's great when we see people want to get to that level of involvement. It's fun because in that way, you know, it gives those companies like a level of ownership in the good work that they're doing. So not only are they, you know, receiving, you know, a benefit for the, you know, offsetting the carbon, or obviously a tax deductible donation, but then they've also got that full, you know, dirt under their fingernails. We're working with a company now to use it as a team building exercise, for instance, to do the surface restoration. So anyway, yeah, and we're small enough that we can offer, you know, kind of any variation of a program. It's funny because every one of our plugs becomes an event at that point. And while our service companies pull their hair out, because, you know, we've got volunteers, you know, all rigged up in FRs and hard hats walking around, you know, like I said, they just want to go and do the work. The biggest thing has been working with the media. And because, again, because every one of our plugs is an event, we typically always have somebody who's interested in coming and filming or being a part of that. So that's been another twist, too. And Brock, I'm sure you can imagine how we've had to sort of coach our service companies through the you know, what to not say. And, you know, anyway, it's all been good. It gives that flavor. I can see probably a reality TV show coming down the pike here for us pretty soon. So
sign me up.
Yeah, well, we'd love to get you out, man. We'd love to get you out on a location.
I'd love to hit a Pennsylvania or Ohio, or, you know, when you're out east being in Michigan, I could probably even drag this editor along and get him muddy.
That would be so fun. Yeah, we just, in fact, on my way back on Saturday, I looked at my first wells there in Ohio, out in the Geneva area. So I can see that we're going to be doing quite a bit of work in that neighborhood too. So
I was a mud engineer when I first started out in the Midwest: Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois. So.
Oh, well, we'd love to have you on location, helping us batch up our plug.
You know, and drilling is so disruptive and important to progressing civilization. And so, you know, often we get to see the infancy and like the development into it giving to us, but getting to see the entire life cycle and the closure and being environmental stewards and responsible for how we started this. I know it excites me as a professional in the industry and a driller and those aspects. And I'm thinking to myself, our audience, the drillers that are out there, the service people, the fluids engineers, how can they get involved? How can they participate? What's next? You're talking Pennsylvania, Ohio, Kansas, Louisiana, Montana. You haven't even talked about Ground Zero, Oklahoma, and Texas yet. So there's a lot to have happen.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's a target-rich environment. And we just, you know, we need to find the projects that are doing it right. What's exciting about the Well Done mission is that, you know, so much of our responsibility is not only is it to do the work that we're doing, but it's really to provide education and support, because this is a team sport and we're not going to do it all by ourselves. And so what we're hoping is that through the development of our ecosystem and our, you know, our teams, if you would, that if we're able to inspire others to join in this fight and to be a part of it, then at the end of the day, we win, right? It's not about, you know, Well Done maintaining the brand and you know, control over this global aspect. It's really about us, you know, helping others to get into this work and to participate. And so that's why, you know, we are working on more of our educational components right now. And we'll be actually taking that on the road to some of these other states to help work with companies to get them involved, supporting them in the development of carbon projects so that they can have a financing base. I mentioned, you know, what we're doing on the materials side. We're going to be here quickly. We'll be launching some well-done materials that are sort of, you know, our own proprietary blends. And what's cool, for instance, is that we just entered into an agreement with a company here in Montana for the supply of those materials. But it's not only will we be able to use those in, you know, the well plugging side, but, you know, on the drilling side too, you're going to be seeing some well done products coming out. And what's fun about that is that, you know, a certain percentage of every bag of LCM that's sold goes to plug orphan wells. So,
well, with that, we'll wrap up today's episode. Thanks again, Curtis. You know, one thing that kind of fascinates me about this is what I imagine the kind of research you have to put in to, you know, find out when a well was made, when it was installed, who created it, what the conditions were, what the depth were. You know, that all would fascinate me. Right? What do you think, Brock?
I think you're right. I can think of as an intern with Baroid running around Pennsylvania looking at, you know, all these old systems, and, you know, this is 20 years ago, and thinking to myself, this, you know, well abandonment's so key when we're talking water wells and everything else, but oil and gas, the regulatory nature hasn't been there from the Railroad Commission to those type of things. And to see a mission like this, it's just awesome. And it's like, this is how I'd love to spend some summer vacation. So, I mean, it's such a great concept that I'm happy we got to have this discussion with Curtis today.
Yeah, no, thank you guys. And to your point, there's lots of volunteer opportunities. You know, I think Brock, you'd asked that question earlier and I probably didn't answer it, but no, there's lots of room for volunteers. This is a labor intensive side. You know, what's interesting is the whole continuum from start to finish can be anywhere from, you know, 12 to 9 months in time. The plugging end of it, like I said, 2 days at the very end, right? So all of the work, Jeremy, that you talked about, the research and the due diligence that goes into, you know, putting a package together for a well and then monitoring it for that period of time, those are what's exciting is that those are some of the new jobs that we're creating in this space. And while we're still going to use oil and gas professionals to do the work at the end of the day, but now we're creating this whole new classification, if you would. And that's what we're excited about, is being able to bring, you know, these teams online in these various locations.
Okay, well, thanks again, Curtis. Where can the audience find out more about you?
We'd love for them to visit our website at www.welldonefoundation.com and or follow us on Facebook or LinkedIn, and I try to personally get to every email that gets sent through the website. It may take me, I'm a couple weeks behind right now, but we'll get them out. But we appreciate everybody's comments. You know, just somebody even calling and or sending us an email and saying thanks. I mean, we get probably 15, 20 of those a day. And that's awesome. That keeps the team going, you know?
Okay. Well, you can find fresh episodes of our show on our website or on Apple Podcasts. Search for Drilling Insight and hit that subscribe button. Visit thedriller.com for the latest industry news and views. And don't forget to follow us on the usual social media channels. So until next time, this is Drilling Insight.